Welcome to Healthcare by the Numbers, a podcast that uncovers what's driving healthcare transformation. Join us each episode as Caravan Health, now part of Signify Health, industry experts interview the brightest minds inspiring healthcare innovation and discuss the numbers which have shaped their thinking.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kim Holland, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs for Signify Health, and I'm your host today on Healthcare by the Numbers. We're producing this live from San Diego, where we're holding Caravan's sixth annual Accountable Care Symposium. And I'm joined today by my colleague, Tim Groninger. So Tim serves as the Executive Vice President of Accountable Care for Signify and as CEO of Caravan Health. Welcome to you, Tim.
Thanks, Kim.
It's good to have you. So today I thought we'd talk about numbers, but in a different way. I thought we'd talk about numbers talk about aspirational numbers. So I was looking at the CMS Innovation Center's strategy refresh, and one of their primary goals is to have all beneficiaries of Medicare and most of Medicaid aligned to an accountable relationship, that kind of relationship where both care and quality is accountable by the provider. And they say in there that right now 67% of Medicare beneficiaries are so aligned. They're either in an MA plan or an ACO. But when you think about it, that leaves 20 million people that are not. And that's not even counting all the Medicaid, the millions of people in Medicaid. So it's a pretty audacious goal, right?
It is.
So I was thinking with your experience in leadership at CMS, and you're certainly well familiar with the folks at CMMI, what do you think is driving that goal?
Well, I think that the motivation behind the goal is the desire to have beneficiaries in a care relationship that is going to be a better set of outcomes for them. CMS has been clear over a number of administrations that they see ACOs and other risk-bearing payment relationships backed up by quality measures as the best place for beneficiaries to be because we've got demonstrated outcomes in these programs at this point, and the Medicare Shared Savings Program being by far the largest. And so they're trying to leverage that success to grow more patients in those relationships, but also to make them deeper and more impactful over time. And this is where I think that there's, even for the beneficiaries that are in MSSP right now, there's a need to make sure that when they go into the specialty care system, it's not just primary care, but when they activate and have more advanced needs, that they are still being managed effectively. And so CMS is going to push on that dimension. They are also going to be looking for payment levers that are going to drive participation, because that ultimately is what drives, these are payment models at the end of the day. And the payment incentives need to be rationalized. Right now, we've got some pretty screwy incentives because of the expiration of some of the MACRA MIPS incentives, the 5% advanced APM bonus. Many in Congress want to extend it, and there's questions about how to line that up. So I think that CMS is going to need to be looking to take advantage of some of these levers and make sure that there is the right set of incentives for providers to participate. And then the market needs to look at that and find successful avenues to participate, whether it's on your own or in partnership with an organization like Signify.
Yeah, it all makes sense, but it doesn't sound like it's an easy lift. So I'm wondering, and I want to come back to some of those incentives, but if you were to quantify or identify one of the top one or two barriers that, from the provider perspective, from the ACO perspective, what would those be? What do you think the big challenges in aligning those 20 million beneficiaries are going to be?
Yeah, I think that when you talk to providers, and we have hundreds of clients here, physicians, hospital leadership, practice managers, barriers that, you know, and these are folks who are mostly in ACOs now, but some that are deciding, issues that are in front of them, front and center, I hear about every single meeting now, is staffing costs are just unsustainable right now, and that's contract travel costs, as well as, you know, core staff. And so people are dealing with multiple crises, having recovering from that sort of rolling ongoing pandemic strains. And so figuring out where this fits in the set of priorities over the next 12 to 18 months is what people are dealing with. And so, what CMS needs to solve for, again, is lining up the right payment incentives. What we and market participants, both providers, and others need to figure out is what's the efficient way to join these programs where they're going to more than pay for themselves so that there's a virtuous flywheel effect created where investing in primary care, investing in good management, investing in downstream management of the post-acute care system more than pays for itself so that you're able to keep this business going because the other parts of the business are on fire right now and you can't take on problems that are going to be bring new crises into the building. So we and others need to make it really easy for providers to do this.
Sure. You talked a moment ago about policy levers. So I think that's probably an important part in all of this. And I know you and I have talked about this thing called the rural glitch. So can you talk about that a little bit and just how you envision that making a real difference, at least for some of our safety net providers?
Yeah, I think, and this is in the category of you need to fine tune and protect the programs that are working well. This is a set of problems that MedPAC has been very attentive to, that you want to have providers in these programs to be rewarded when they do well. And in this case, when they do well by reducing total spending. All of these programs work on a combination of historical benchmarks and administrative benchmarks. Historical is when what my expenditures in the past were are used to influence the target that I'm aiming at in the future, right? And so what you don't want to have happen, and this when I worked with a lot of economists in the administration, their obsession with avoiding a ratchet effect was deep and strong. You want to avoid a situation, which we have in a couple of places, often in rural areas, but it actually applies anywhere where a provider is a large part of the regional component of spending. Your performance and your success drag down your own benchmark. And you can also drag down the entire regional benchmark if you're a large component of that. So fixing the rural glitch, as it's called, which again, not just rural, but fixing that is really important to not penalize providers that are doing well in these programs. And to allow them to continue to have incentives so that you aren't eating your own lunch, so to speak, or just making your life constantly harder by succeeding. That's a very poor incentive design. CMS is aware of this problem. They've got a couple of options for fixing it. They solicited comments on it in last year's physician fee schedule. So we're hopeful that they're going to be taking another bite at the apple this time around and be able to fix that problem.
Good news, we hope, anyway. So what other things would you point out as really serious or significant changes that you think need to be made to create the right incentives?
Well, I think that CMS has a really good set of alternative payment models available right now. With the Medicare Shared Savings Program that is large, it's not growing as fast as it should and as fast as CMS wants to, partly because of some of the mistakes in the incentive design over the last couple of years. I think that fixing the rural glitch is a big part of that. I think that CMS and Congress need to make sure that the physician fee schedule rewards providers who are willing to do the hard work of investing in practice transformation, because the easier path of just trying to get a high quality incentive through MIPS looks more attractive to physicians, and it's it potentially less transformative for the practice and the patient, and not something the government should be favoring with the same type of incentives. But then CMS also needs to be continually developing the next set of where more advanced providers can go in these programs that are able to really wrap their arms around their communities and around their patients and deliver all of the services that they need. That's what the CMS is working on with the REACH model, Realizing Equity Access and Community Health ACO that the Innovation Center is piloting right now. And that's something that we've applied for. We're talking to a number of clients. There's a fair good bit of interest in it in the industry, and it's something that I think can power more participation, giving providers more options helps in that regard.
Yeah, at the end of the day, I mean, this payment transformation or the transformation of care is all about the patient, really. And so those incentives not only aligning to ensure that the provider has the adequate resources to stay in business, but also to stay in business serving beneficiaries and providing, as you said, the care that they need. In some cases, that's social care. Nowadays, we're focused more than we have been in the past, perhaps, on social determinants of health. But I think, to your point, that flexibility makes it possible for providers to really use those rewards to invest in a practice that can really make a difference in a much broader sense for the whole patient, right?
Yep. Absolutely.
So Caravan was really founded on the whole principle of developing ACOs, and predominantly, as I understand, in the rural areas, right? Rural safety mm-hmm. net providers and so forth. And you've been quite successful doing that. So what's your secret sauce? What's made Caravan stand out in that particular, which seems, and I think for many, strikes as a kind of a challenging population, both from a provider side as well as from a beneficiary side?
Yeah, I mean, we started in rural areas because we had relationships there, and we had providers who were willing to work with us on sharing data. That was, it's hard to believe, but 15 years ago, you couldn't actually get Medicare claims data on your own patients from the government. And so the ACO program was the first opportunity to do that. And Lynn Barr, our founder, a number of our founding hospitals and clients realized an opportunity to get Medicare data, identify problems, and then run out solving those problems. Whether it's patients that really needed a lot more attention from a nurse care manager, or patients who were cycling through the system in ways that were harmful to them and also very expensive. So you get access to the data, and then you start building the pieces of what are you going to do about it once you know what the big problems in your community are. And our model has always been team-based care, primary care enablement, with increasing amounts of sophistication around the types of analytics and data that we can bring to bear at the point of care. We've got clients all over the country now. We are rural, we are urban, we are suburban, and our model has grown to really also help providers manage risk in these programs through collaborative ACO relationships, where the problem the ACO program had very early on was that they set a minimum program size of 5,000 beneficiaries. The actuaries thought that was an appropriate level. Even then, they were a little uncomfortable, so they said, you got to save at least 4% to receive any payment from CMS, so that we know that it's probably not random. Saving that much early on in the program was very challenging, and it really kept participation depressed. So by bringing groups together and keeping the variability of spending much lower in larger ACOs, we're able to bring the benefits of being a part of a larger collaborative to smaller organizations. And even if you're 10,000 lives, 30 PCPs that you're working with, that's still not enormous. And so you need partners to do this effectively. And we've been fortunate in the partners that we've worked with and have been really focused on helping them support their primary care teams. And now with the Signify merger, we're able to do far more than we were able to do just as Caravan. And so I'm super excited about that and bringing that to all of our clients and new folks that we're talking to as well.
Back to that in just a second, but I was thinking about what you were saying in terms of some of these at-risk populations that you're dealing with, and the administration has been very, very focused on health equity, an important, certainly important objective for all of us, but there's no doubt some challenges, and I'm curious to know from your perspective, in terms of that specifically, what challenges do you see for ACOs in achieving greater health equity or pursuing that, and why should they do it? Aside than we could agree that it's the right thing to do, are there other just practical realities about why this is important in managing any population?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of strands there, and it's been clearly a focus of the Biden administration from the beginning. But even before that, it's been a focus of policymakers for a while now. And I think a greater awareness of how different populations are doing within any practice starts with just collecting data better than we have before. Data on race, data on education level, data on gender identity, and then using that to understand, are we going to find outcomes that we weren't expecting, where a particular group, a disadvantaged group, is struggling on a measure. Any practice you talk to will tell you that African American patients are far disproportionately affected by kidney disease. And so what can we do to help manage that condition better, that will help patients that have been traditionally underserved by the healthcare system. Stepping up to the policy level, CMS wants to drive that with a focus on data and requirements. And, you know, the REACH program, again, there are expanded data collection requirements, including a patient survey instrument that they're going to expect participants to use to get more granular data on social needs and on demographic information than you can get just from the Medicare files. But then they're also going to have expectations for those more advanced providers that you're actually doing something about it. And so for us, you know, being in 2.5 million Medicare Advantage homes over the course of a year, we see social needs all the time and capture, you know, 2 to 4 social needs per visit in the in-home part of the business. Mm-hmm. What we are excited about in the REACH program and other ACO programs going forward is you now have an economic model where you can pick up and do something about it. So maybe the patient needs help with transportation, or maybe the patient needs access to a prescription drug discount program to help them access their diabetes medications, or there's a number of social services that can be coordinated in the local area that just need to be activated once a patient need is identified. And actually putting resources and time on that is a really big opportunity. A lot, you know, it's well known at this point that social needs drive a ton of, you know, most health outcomes more than most clinical characteristics do, and that focusing on these is a big opportunity, and figuring out the right sized approach to doing that is something that I'm excited to be working on right now.
Yeah, it does seem we have great opportunities to connect the dots for patients, right? I mean, that is what we talk about when we talk about the continuum of care, but it is much bigger than just that clinical piece. And to the extent that we're able to focus on those broader social issues and really address them in a meaningful way is going to be significant for patients. So it's I've observed as CMS is asking for that data across all of their programs. We've seen it recently in requirements and or requests for proposals or for information in their various rules about how do we collect the data, what kind of data should be we collect, should it be standardized across programs and so forth. So I think as we look at the different responses from the healthcare community, it'd be interesting to see how CMS pursues it. But appreciate the essential role that data plays in really understanding the issues and then being able to address them in a meaningful way. So you mentioned the acquisition of Signifies, or by Signify, of Caravan. So that's an exciting development, and that you were excited about. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? Just you alluded to it, but what actually gets you going and excited in the morning about that partnership?
Yeah, I mean, we were, as Caravan alone, always looking for ways to improve our product offering and what more we can do for our clients. And like I mentioned, we are, you know, heavily focused on primary care enablement and then looking for other ways to penetrate parts of the system, take advantage of relationships we have with health systems, for instance, and leverage that to manage the post-acute care space. Figure out ways to identify and capture gaps in care that we know about and need to document, and you know, and then power action in the primary care clinic to actually close those gaps. The Signify acquisition represented an opportunity to sort of leapfrog what our aspirations on the next generation of Caravan were and jump to like Caravan 3.0, essentially, and you know, doing that with an established partner who had these deep relationships and deep market presence in every county in the country through the Medicare Advantage and home evaluation business just made a ton of sense. Doing it with Signify and the capability of managing specialty care, managing post-acute care through the episodes part of the business, it was clear to us that there was no one else in the market that was thinking about the problem this way, and that, you know, this is where, you know, Signify and Kyle was headed, and the partnership made a ton of sense for our clients and for our team and our company. And so we were thrilled when we started doing this, and once we met and saw how the pieces added up together, it was an aha moment. And it was, you know, super quick realization of the opportunity here, and a rush to get it done so that we could start activating all this work, because there's a ton of really cool and interesting projects underway to make sure that we're lining this up with our client needs exactly. But the sky's the limit on what we can do here, and I'm just so excited to be part of the team.
Well, I can tell you from Signify standpoint, we're excited as well. So it is tremendous potential, and if nothing else, 20 million people that we have the opportunity to go after, right?
Absolutely.
So it's been great talking with you today, Tim. Any last thoughts, anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to share with the audience?
We didn't talk about Medicaid, and I think that's a really important category for CMS, and it's where it's the biggest health insurer in the country. It has a lot of similarities right now to the way the Medicare Advantage world works, and it's all administered through state leadership and state partnerships. It's an area that that Signify has again had a complementary set of capabilities to. What we, we hadn't really tapped into it at Caravan, and it's a population that I, it's complicated. It's a whole series of different subpopulations in a way that is a lot different from Medicare, and so that's another area that we are, looking to grow and looking to help a lot more patients. And CMS is also pushing, accountable relationships in that space too.
Yeah, that was the follow-up question I was going to ask you, because states really drive the policy around, much of the policy around Medicaid. So I was curious, in your observations, are more states adopting value-based principles in the design of their programs?
They are, and it's both for reasons of, the quality metrics and cost management. There's also a desire for states to leverage the momentum in Medicare and start to bake in value-based requirements to their Medicaid managed care bids. And so we see in more states these contracts coming through where the plans are required by the states to figure out a strategy for bringing in bundled payments or bringing in total cost of care contracts. And if you've got ACOs, you've got physicians and hospitals already engaged in this work in your market, it makes a ton of sense for them to then stack on top of their Medicare and Medicare Advantage business similar work in activating value-based services for Medicaid beneficiaries, and it's better for everybody.
It certainly is important. The government's role in all of this is really critical, and their efforts to really drive the value movement will continue to play an important role in everyone's success in this area. So it's great to have an opportunity to collaborate with them. So appreciate it, Tim, very, very much. Thank you all for joining us today for Healthcare by the Numbers. And until next time, stay safe.